Eternals. Now, I've just come back from seeing the Eternals for the second time. Saw it last week from this recording of this podcast. And I absolutely loved this film. I thought it was fantastic. This was a film I wasn't excited about. I'm a big Marvel Cinematic Universe fan. I'm a big Marvel fan. Now, I was really looking forward to Shang-Chi this year. First time I saw it, I was underwhelmed. And then as I watched it more and more, I loved it more and more. And it's like my favorite film of the year. This is a close second. It really is. This film, I was looking forward to Eternals because I knew nothing about it. It seemed interesting. And I was looking forward to discovering new characters in the MCU, new worlds. I don't need to see the same character over and over and over and over and over again. You know, I like seeing the favorite characters here and, you know, but I don't need to see like a 10th Spider-Man movie. You know, I'm a Spider-Man fan like everyone else, but I don't get so excited by another new Spider-Man film, although I am looking forward to the one that's coming out, No Way Home. That's coming out after this, but I digress. This film, again, know nothing about it, was excited to see a new story in the MCU, new characters, new mythology. But when I saw the trailers, it just did nothing for me. I just was like, it just seemed meh, I don't really care. It doesn't look that great. I'm going to go see it because it's Marvel, it's part of the MCU. I'm watching every MCU film because I'm a big fan of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. The filmmakers that really created this universe, Kevin Feige, everything he's doing. I'm definitely going to watch this film. But if it wasn't a Marvel film, I wouldn't be that bothered. My God, I was so surprised at how much I loved this film from the beginning, you know, with the rolling credits in the beginning, Arsham, before the six singularities were created, and hence talking about the Infinity Stones. Even before then, we're talking about the time of Arsham, you know, who is the celestial, who created the universe, all this kind of stuff. And I was just like, wow, okay, this is getting deep. And even the end from the first action scene, like at first, when I first saw the film, I was kind of like tuned off a bit because I kind of had my expectations like low, like, eh, this isn't going to be all that. But as I was watching the action scenes, I was like, oh, this is really good, you know. And I was just blown away when you see the deviants emerge from the oceans, like in the time of Mesopotamia, you know, 2,000 years ago, 5,000 years ago, however long that was. And it was just, you know, and one of them devours this man, you know, and then is about to devour this young boy or girl, whatever it was. And then you just see the blast, like, take him out. And then you see all the Eternals come and they're combating the deviants. And it was so good. Like, I was just like, okay, you know, fight scenes were fantastic. I thought, especially Thena's fight scenes, played by Angelina Jolie, like the goddess of war, you know, she had a very elegant wushu style, kind of Greek goddess style fighting. Kind of reminded me a lot of Achilles fighting style a little bit in Troy, and a mix between that and that film. What's that film that I really loved? That was another film that I wasn't expecting to be good, that I really liked. It was based on, like, again, Greek mythology, because I'm a big Greek mythology fan. But this film, Immortals, yeah. Like, some of the fighting in that from the gods, the Greek gods in that, like, they use a lot of that kind of style, really fast, kind of mixed between, like, Chinese wushu, but also, like, European kind of, you know, or Greek kind of combat. And I really liked her scenes in it. It was really good, her fight scenes. But everyone's fight scenes were really good. The action was really good. But this film, I just loved it. It was so epic on an epic scale. You know, we're talking about Celestials, the creation of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, essentially, you know. And I loved the fact that they went through time. You know, we saw vast amounts of time. We saw the Eternals, you know, at the beginning of the dawn of time, and when Xerxes, like, presented the boy with the bronze Blade, you know, so seeing the evolution of the technology and her ability to transform like material into different things, and she turned that stone blade that that boy was creating or using that the stone blade into a bronze blade, so it kind of like birthed the age of the Bronze Age, that kind of thing. It was I just love that kind of stuff. I love that historical kind of thing. And then it shows them in Babylon and, you know, like defeating the deviants in Babylon. It was just so fantastic. I loved it. And then to present day, you know, you see, you know, Xerxes, she's, you know, this, she's at the Natural History Museum. I love the fact that it was taking place in London. I recognized a lot of the sites as a Londoner, you know, Camden Town, you know, they see them in Camden as they're attacked by the deviants, things like that. And it was just great, you know, you see, what's his name? Kit Harington's character, the Black Knight, the guy who's going to be playing the Black Knight, he's going to become the Black Knight. What's his name? I've forgotten now. Dane Whitman. Yeah, so Dane Whitman is covering her class on apex predators in the Natural History Museum, and it's so cool. Like, I love that kind of stuff, and there was all of that in this film and more, and the mythology behind the Eternals, how they were created, why they were created, the bigger, why they didn't get involved with Thanos and all the conflicts throughout human history, and how they were instructed not to do so unless deviants were involved, and the reason being was because of the evolution of humanity needed to have these conflicts so that they could create greater technology and become, you know, the, you know, create the miracles that we do create in our technology. That's what makes us different from the other mammals on this planet, is our ability to really advance with our technology. You know, other mammals have a more natural equilibrium in the surrounding environment. You know, they do create things like nests and webs and things of that nature, but nothing like what we humans have done. And, you know, this was really the story of that, but it was the story of something a lot deeper, you know. I'll get into that in a moment as I go more spoilery, but just like, I just loved all the interactions with the characters. All the characters were so I loved all of the characters in this film, from Xerxes to Icarus, and I love the fact that they're like kind of based off Greek mythology in a way, because it was like they came from Olympia, you know, or they thought they came from Olympia anyway. So, you know, Icarus, the boy who flew too close to the sun, you know, and it was played so well by Richard Madden, you know. I thought his performance was fantastic, as was everybody in this film, you know. And yes, there's going to be some comparisons to Superman, because he flies and he has, you know, beams fly, energy beam blasts out of his eyes, but doesn't make him Superman, you know. But I can see, you know, obviously there was some jokes about that in the film, you know. Ajax, played by Selma Hayek, you know, from all the way, Kingo, he was really good as well. Sprite, you know, the whole Peter Pan thing with her, like the fact that she doesn't age, you know. You've got Fastos, who's the master of technology, and how he's trying to help humanity. You see his passion for technology, and then later on you see how he kind of like, he feels cursed by the technology that he created, helped advance humanity, because of some of the things that happened throughout history and how that affected him. Makari and a super speed, which was so fantastic to watch on screen. Druid, I thought he was brilliant. I've seen that actor before, Barry Kergohan. He's quite a charming actor. He's got a lot of charisma. Like, I can't remember what film or show I saw him in before, but he had a very strong presence, and again, he had a very strong presence in this film. Druid's like kind of like Professor Xavier. He's got that mind control. He can control the minds of every living being on the planet, you know. Gilgamesh, you know, the strong kind of protector guy who has that complete loyalty to Athena, despite Athena's problems with her mind control and what she's all, or not her mind control. It was basically she was having some mental issues that were causing her to attack the Eternals at times. But this comes to, as we find out later on, from past memories. It was so good. Even Karan, the Bollywood assistant of Kingo, you know, who always had his cameras like all free time. You'd have one camera, destroy it. You'd have another camera. I loved that guy. That guy, he was awesome in the film. But yeah, the films, the character, and the interactions between the characters was really good. You know, so like I said, you got Athena and. Athena and Gilgamesh, they had a strong relationship. It wasn't quite romantic, but it was more, it felt a bit romantic, but it was also more like a protector. Like Gilgamesh was kind of her protector, even though she doesn't really need protecting because she's like the best warrior, but she needs protecting from herself, you know, and he was willing to be that guy rather than have her memories erased. He was willing to be that guy, you know, to stand by her and show her that, you know, strength, be that ox, be that, you know, mountain of a man. I mean, he's got the mountain stature physically, but he also had that, like, character wise you know, where she was weak, he was strong, because she might have been strong physically with her fighting skills, but emotionally and mentally she wasn't, because she had those lapses in her memory that were causing the conflict between the group, where she was attacking them randomly, but this was coming from things from the past that we find out later in the film. Like, so Ajax, she's obviously played by Salma Hayek. She was like the leader of the whole team. She was like kind of like the matriarch of the Eternals. So she's the one who interacts with Arsham, who is the one that they, the creator, you know. And oh my god, when you see Arsham on screen, just the scope and scale of that character and the design, it was so epic. It was like nothing you've seen in the MCU. You know, you think you've seen massive things and battles and, you know, galaxies and all this kind of stuff, but then you see like Arsham and you're like, wow. Like when you see Salma Hayek's Ajax like taken up into space and like she's looking at this face kind of thing, and she's like a little ant compared to his face. His face is the size of Mount Everest compared to her. And it was just such a scope and scale. And you only saw it when Cersei was brought in front of Arsham. And then you see her like right by his like finger, and the fan was so massive. It was like a mountain compared to her. And just that scale of having Arsham in the atmosphere, it was so good. It was awe inspiring. It made my, like, you know, it was on the edge of my seat looking at that. It was so epic. I really wish I'd seen this in IMAX, because I never got a chance to see it in IMAX, both screenings. IMAX weren't showing it because I didn't get to see it the first week because I had other things going on. So now it doesn't seem like IMAX is showing it at the moment, since it's been out for a few weeks now. But I really need to, I think if you get a chance, you've got to see Eternals in IMAX. This is a film you need to see on the big screen. It's don't wait for Disney Plus. Go and see it in the cinema. It's epic. It's really good, you know. And yeah, Makari and Druid had a good they had that kind of relationship that again was bordering on romantic, but they didn't really show, they didn't ever kiss in the film, but there was a lot of flirtation between them. You've got the relationship between Karan and Kingo. Obviously, and there's a little joke about he thought he was a vampire on the Bollywood set when he was telling him, oh, I thought he was a vampire, and I almost staked you in the heart. And there's something that comes back later on that's a good reference to that, which I'll talk about in a minute. Yeah, just, and Icarus and Cersei obviously had that romantic relationship, and then obviously you've got Dane Whitman and Cersei, so there's that kind of triangle between the two Game of Thrones lads, the two Game of the Thrones men. both in love with a woman called Cersei. So us Game of Thrones fans were like, obviously, we were looking at that one. But yeah, so it's a film you need to see for yourself. You really need to see it for yourself. The stuff that happens in the film is epic, on an epic scale. That seems it's just as grand, if not more grand, than what happened in Endgame. But the only thing is, you can't compare it to Endgame in the scope and scale and the emotion that you felt, because obviously Endgame is a amalgamation of 20 films or 20 plus films, multiple characters, and this big epic saga, which was the Infinity Saga, you know, which we've been watching for the last 10 years. And it was massive stakes because it was universal stakes. But this film actually encompasses all of that in one film, in a way, because it had some universal stakes involved that were, you know, the stuff that was happening was beyond the Infinity stuff, you know. It was like, made the Infinity stuff seem quite small, you know, compared to it. And it just, what I loved about this film, within the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, it actually showed how big the universe is. Because I remember after Endgame, so many people were, oh, what are they going to do after Endgame? What are they going to do after Endgame? And now, like, Shang-Chi come out, blew everyone's mind away. Now this has come out. It's not been as, like, beloved as Shang-Chi. It seems to be quite divisive. It seems like some people love it, some people don't like it. I'm on the fence of people who love it. I think most people do like it, but, you know, it's not been as, like, universally loved as some of the other Marvel films. I don't know what. I think it's fantastic. I heard some people saying it doesn't feel like a Marvel film either. I didn't get that impression. Maybe there's people just saying that because it's not tied to the Infinity Saga or any other characters that we've seen before. But, you know, I think people always say that when a new property for Marvel comes out. I always say the same things. Oh, it doesn't feel like a Marvel film. They've done something different. They're all different. Like, every film, that people say the same quotes, you know, and it's quite funny. It's like, I don't know why people love to talk about Marvel like that. But anyway, man, I just thought this film was fantastic. I'm gonna get into some spoilers, but just before I do, just in case you haven't seen the movie, I'll give it a 4.5 out of 5. I absolutely loved it. I was not expecting to love it as much as I did, and I absolutely loved it. It was fantastic. I highly recommend you see this film, and you need to see it on the big screen just to see Arsham on screen, like that big celestial, like gargantuan, like being compared to like the Eternals, like a humanoid sized, you know, godlike creature. But oh my god, like it was really epic. It was really epic. Right, so if you don't want the film spoiled, so now's a good time to leave the podcast and maybe just bookmark this and watch the rest of it from this point, or listen to the rest of it at this point once you've seen the film. Right, spoiler talk. Now, what I loved about this film is just it gave a good dilemma. It gave a dilemma, because what we find out is obviously Arsham had created the Eternals to protect the humanity from the deviants, help them advance so that they can, you know, be prosperous and advance and, you know, populate the earth and, you know, do good and everything else. But what we will really find out was the reason why Arsham wanted that to happen was because Earth had been chosen as a seed for one of the Celestials. Now, the birth of the Celestial needed the energy and life force from humanity or for the Earth to be populated and have enough mass to literally, you know, or enough energy from all the life forms on Earth to be birthed. And by being birthed, that Celestial would destroy the planet, because it would literally, the seed would like literally be birthed from the planet Earth and take all the energy from planet Earth. So I've seen some people say Thanos was right. It's quite funny, because in a way because even Salma Hayek's character Ajax explains that to Icarus, that Thanos snapped away half of the life from on the planet, you know, in the universe in general, but on planet Earth. And then when Hulk brought everyone back in Endgame, that emergence of everybody else, the blip, was enough to bring back all that energy, all that life form for the Celestial to be born, you know. And it was kind of ironic because Thanos was saying obviously there was too many people, and because of that there wasn't enough resources, and if life isn't checked, life will cease to exist. So it's so weird because it's almost like he knew what was going to happen, even though he didn't know this part, even though he is from a Celestial being. And you know, we see in the post credits scene his brother come into the scene, but I don't know if Thanos knew about the Celestials or he knew about this. I don't think he knew that much about this kind of thing, but he still had that inkling about obviously life being checked. And obviously he wasn't right, what he did was genocide and it was wrong and yada yada yada, but it's kind of ironic that him doing the snap actually saved humanity a little bit, because it stopped the birth of the Celestial on planet Earth. Because if he hadn't done that, the Celestial was literally days away from being born because of all that life force on Earth. And that life force disappearing stopped the birth of the Celestial. So this is what I mean about Marvel, man. It gets deep, man. It's like, it's more philosophical questions about what's right, what's wrong. Oh my God. Like, so they stopped that. Thanos actually doing that did actually stop, like, the planet from being destroyed. But at the same time, now the Eternals have this, you know, Ajax has this attachment to the people on Earth, and you see her try to you know, defend them a little bit when she's talking to Arsham, and these Arsham's like, don't get too attached to the, you know, the Earth and the people there. Remember your mission, you know. And she even said to Icarus, I haven't doubted Arsham for millions of years until now. But when, like Arsham explained, the Celestials birth entire solar systems by creating stars that allow the energy and the solar power from the suns to create life. So by stopping the birth of a Celestial, which has happened for thousands, millions and millions and millions of years in the Marvel Universe, and created solar systems and planets and multiverses, as we're going to find out about, like, all the different universes and multiverses within the Marvel Universe, all the life that was, the life forms created came from the birth of these Celestials. So the Eternals obviously have an attachment to planet Earth, but it's that question about, you know, is one life worth, you know, 100 lives kind of thing. But as Captain America would say, we don't trade lives, you know what I mean? So, but it was a hard question, because it's like, well, by stopping the birth of the Celestial, yes, you're saving planet Earth, but you're actually preventing life of, like, entire solar system or galaxy or universe or whatever, you know, of billions of other life forms that would have been created from that Celestial's birth. And even, like, there was a good philosophical debate between the Eternals, like, saying, well, we don't, you know, it's like Kingo, he said it, he was like, well, we don't have the right to kill a Celestial, we don't have the right to stop this, you know. Cersei even wrestled with it. Icarus, obviously, he was very dedicated to the mission, and so he believed in Arsham and what, you know, Arsham's vision and what Arsham had planned for them, and the way things were supposed to be. He wanted to follow that to the T. But obviously the group didn't, you know. Fastos obviously was one of the ones that was mainly concerned. He has a son, he's got, you know, a lover, he didn't want, you know, to their lives, his family was more important than than the birth of the Celestial. But this is the way things are. This is kind of like the natural order of things. But it's kind of like even how Arsham created the Deviants to be a check for the Apex Predators. Because those predators, would, when they were taking out too much life, they needed to balance that. Again, the whole balance thing that Thanos always talks about. So he created the Deviants to check the Apex Predators to make sure that there was balance on the planets. But those beings evolved and they became something a bit more, something he couldn't control, and something that posed danger to humanity, hence why he created the Eternals, you know, and he's wiped their memories for so many years, thousands or millions and millions of years, every time this has happened. So every time that a Celestial has been born and then this emergence has happened, he's wiped their memories. So they had no memories of this stuff. They thought they came from Olympus. They thought they were like, they didn't think they were sentient beings. They didn't realize they were created as like kind of like robots. So they still had emotions and they still had a connection to this place and memories that don't exist. But Arsham kept those memories, you know. So it was crazy, actually, just to see how deep this film was. It was so deep. There's so many different levels to it. I understood everything, and I really enjoyed it. I needed to watch it a second time before I did this review because I had too much to say. I have too much to say right now. I'm just like got verbal diarrhea basically right now because my brain is still dissecting all the things that I saw, you know. And I'm just so excited about where the Marvel Universe is going now, you know, with the multiverse of madness and all that kind of stuff that's going on. We've seen in Spider-Man and things to come, as we will discuss more in a moment. But like even that scene near the end where Arsham comes for judgment and you see him in the sky, the skies, like the thunder and the lightning and the parting of the skies, and you see him in the sky, like, and everybody's like, I love the fact that we see Dane Whitman and Cersei, they're having a little moment and Dane Whitman's about to reveal something about his family history and, you know, who is this guy? And then, you know, Arsham appears in the sky and just takes her into space, and it was quite like, it sent shivers down your spine at the scale of, like I said, just of this sentient being, this Celestial in the sky, in the outer space, and you could see how massive he was, and everybody on planet Earth could see that, and that was like a howling experience, and it sent goosebumps down my, you know, neck when I was watching that in the cinema. Can you imagine if you saw that in reality, how that would like completely shock you, despite all the things that the people on Earth and in the Marvel Universe have gone through, all the normal people have gone through, the snap and all this stuff, and they've seen the Avengers, they've seen, you know, Doctor Strange, they've seen all this stuff, you know, but and then seeing that, it's just another level, you know. Things won't be the same, especially obviously they've got like a giant Celestial that's trying to come out of the Earth, and now they've got this big stone statue in the middle of the Indian Ocean that's just there. You know, things won't be the same in the Marvel Universe. And her ability, Cersei, to change things, like, so when she first changed the Deviant into a tree, that was so weird. It was like, oh, what is that? Why did she, what happened there? She wasn't able to do that before. So her ability then to kind of, because their initial plan was to have Druid control the mind of the Celestial and put him to sleep, and then in the meantime, while he was asleep, they were going to take all of everyone off the planet and bring them onto another planet so that the humans and the creatures on the planet Earth could survive. But it ended up not being that way, and they ended up having to kill the Celestial. But yeah, that so good, such a great film, so epic. Post-credit scene, the first post-credit scene, I didn't really, because I don't know that, I'm not familiar with that character, Pip the Troll, or Thanos' brother. I forgot what his name is now. Again, I'm not familiar with those characters, and I wasn't familiar with Harry Styles either. One Direction. I know who One Direction is, but I don't really follow them, so I don't. When I saw that in cinema, people were like laughing and cheering and everything, and I was like, "What are they laughing and cheering?" Eros. So Harry Styles plays Eros, the brother of Thanos. I didn't know the character of Eros, but I didn't know Harry Styles, and that's what most people were cheering about in the cinema. I didn't really understand that scene, but, you know, it'd be interesting to see what happens with that character moving forward in the MCU. That post-credit scene was fine, but the post-credit scene that I loved the most was the last one, with Dane Whitman pulling out the ebony blade, his family history, something that he was really afraid of. And what I loved about that scene, it was so good, because he was, like, fighting with the, you know, bringing that relic out of its box, you know, and even picking it up. And then you hear like the kind of spirits voices coming from the sword, coming from that blade. It was kind of interesting. And even, and as he puts his hand towards the blade, you see all the black goo off the blade coming towards him. And then you hear this voice saying, "Are you sure you want to do that, Mr. Whitman?" And I didn't know who that was. I was like, "Who is that?" I thought, was it Nick Fury? Who is that? I had no idea. But I was watching John Campia's show, my favourite movie talk show on YouTube, currently. Well, I've been watching that for years. It's one of my favourites. And they were discussing that. All the people were discussing that when I was watching the spoiler talk, the spoiler show. And they were saying, "Oh, it's Blade." I was like, "Really? That's Blade?" That made me like the film even more after I saw that. I was like, "Wow, Blade, yes." Because I've been looking forward to Blade since they announced it. Since Mahershala Ali came on stage and he put the hat on, that he's going to be the Blade hat on. And, you know, obviously I'm a big fan of Blade, the Wesley Snipes Blade movies. I love those films. Not so much the third one, but the first and second one were fantastic. Wesley Snipes was fantastic as Blade, but it's good to see Blade being recognized as a Marvel character, because they didn't really market Blade as a Marvel. They didn't really market Blade as a Marvel character until the third film, really. But it's nice to see, because he's going to be in the MCU now. So, and having Mahershala Ali playing Blade is going to be fantastic. So, and I like the fact they've, because it was like, "Oh, how are they going to fit vampires in there?" And obviously you had that little Easter egg about vampires when Kingo's talking about Karim, the director, or his assistant, should I say, how he almost sticked him in the heart because he thought he was a vampire. So that was a little bit of an Easter egg there. But then you've got now, okay, so Blade teaming up with, or I don't know if what the connection is going to be between him and Dane Whitman, Kit Harington's character, and how Blade is going to feature in, if Dane Whitman's going to feature in the Blade movie, or in the, is Blade going to be in the Black Knight movie? Because I know obviously Dane Whitman becomes the Black Knight character, so I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see like where that goes, and if they end up teaming up, and what the Ebony Blade means, because I don't know much about that character. I know obviously not about Blade, but I don't know about him, so I don't know about Dane Whitman character. So I'm very interested to see Dane Whitman and how he fits into the whole MCU, how his character and how that Ebony Blade, what powers that possesses, and what his family connection is. That's there's a lot of mystery around his character, and I really liked that. And now the connection to Blade makes it more, even more interesting, because it's like, what does Blade know about this weapon? Obviously, Blade deals with like vampires, but he also deals with a lot of mythical things as well. So, you know, it's not just Dracula and vampires and Reapers and you know, the blood god and all that kind of stuff that Blade deals with. It's not just vampire stuff, but it's also more supernatural kind of monsters and beings and things of that nature. So I'm telling you, man, people underestimate Marvel and the Marvel Cinematic Unit, the MCU, Marvel Studios. Do not underestimate them. All the stuff that we saw in the last 10 years in the Infinity Saga, this stuff is nobody knew anything about Iron Man, Thor, Captain America, Black Panther, Doctor Strange, Guardians of the Galaxy. Nobody knew. We all act like we've known about them for like forever. No, you didn't. That before the MCU, nobody knew anything about these characters. So that's why I don't get overly excited by seeing Spider-Man number 10. You know, I'm like, okay, we've seen Spider-Man already, like, so many times. Like, I want to see new characters. So when they were announcing that the Eternals was coming this year, and Shang-Chi, which I was the most excited about, like, it's new characters, new mythology, interwoven into this world we're already familiar with. And there's so much more to the Marvel Cinematic Universe than just the Infinity Saga. We've done with that saga. That saga is small compared to the things we've dealt with so far in Shang-Chi and in the Eternals now. Like, the massive scale of things that, and the time span of the Eternals dwarfs anything we've seen in the MCU so far. And then when you look at Shang-Chi, the fight scenes, the martial arts dwarfs any of the kind of fighting we've seen in the MCU so far. And we've seen some fantastic fight scenes, we've seen some fantastic fighters in the MCU, but Shang-Chi obviously puts them all to bed, you know, with his fantastic martial arts skills. But then there's also the mythology behind the rings. Where did those rings come from? The film is called The Legend of the Ten Rings, and I think it's a great title, but it didn't really tell you the legend of the Ten Rings. It should almost be called Shang-Chi and the Mystery of the Ten Rings, because we're wondering, well, where are these rings come from? How did when we even find those wings, like, what is, you know, where does it get its power from? Why is it now sending a beacon out in the universe that they felt in Kamataj, that, you know, now even Captain Marvel's never seen any of the relics throughout, you know, the galaxy or the universe, you know. So there's so much going on, like, from these two movies that we've had this year. Like, I know we had Black Widow, but that doesn't really count as a Phase 4 film. That's more of a prequel film, and it wasn't very good either. But, like, Shang-Chi and Eternals, fantastic. But the things that happened in those films were so epic and on scale within those films that it made the Marvel Universe expand even more. And, you know, in Shang-Chi, we're seeing dragons and soul demons and things of that nature, and, you know, another world in Tong Lom. And then obviously with the Eternals, you know, we're seeing, like, humanity's, the birth of the universe beyond the Infinity Stones, and dealing with Arsham and the creation of celestials and galaxies, and the scale is off the chain. So I'm so excited about the Marvel Universe moving forward. I think Eternals was fantastic. I loved the film. I thought everybody in the film was fantastic. I was pleasantly surprised at how good this film was, you know. And I love the story between Sprite as well. She was eternally, like, that in the body of a little girl, you know, a young girl. So she wasn't able to have romantic love. She wasn't able to have an adult relationship, even or even be like an adult. You know, she wasn't able to grow up because she's in the body of a young girl. So, but she's thousands of years old, so that was torturous for her, you know. I love that story. But I'll have to go back to Icarus, the whole thing about flying too close to the sun. What Chloe Zhao, the director, she did a fantastic job in this film. And what one of the things she did a fantastic job in was the cinematography, how she used loads of sun flare, black backlighting from the sun in lots of shots with Icarus, and it was almost foreshadowing his fate and what he was going to do. Because Icarus, obviously the Greek legend, is of the boy who flew too close to the sun, and then the wings were melted, you know. And even when Fastos was fighting him, he said, "I'm wanting to clip your wings for so long." So there was loads of these kind of metaphors from Greek mythology in this all the way through. But just having him flying into the sun, it was very Shakespearean, because he couldn't deal with the conflict of interest between his duty to Arsham and the birth of the celestial, and making sure that the natural order of things continues and the birth of the new celestial and birth of the new universe and new life versus the planet Earth, and saving the planet Earth and essentially not being able to kill the woman he loved in Cersei. He wasn't able to do that. He folded to his emotional self instead of his logical self, because his emotional self and logical self were battling out. But he believed in both of those ideals, and he couldn't hold that nuance of the conflicting ideas of, oh my God, like, I need to do my duty to Arsham, and I need this to make sure that this emergence happens, and that the celestial is born, and that the circle of life is continued from the birth of the suns, and that's going to come from the celestial being creating new life, versus the destruction of the planet Earth, and, you know, essentially, you know, not fighting and not killing my brothers and sisters, basically, and my, you know, the woman that I love, you know, in Cersei. And he ended up obviously being part of that uni mind that helped kill the celestial and essentially helped destroy the mission that he was so dedicated to. And he just couldn't deal with that. So it was very Shakespearean. And the only way he was able to deal with that was by ending his own life. And how did he do it? By flying into the sun. You know, the Icarus, the boy flew too close to the sun. So he ended up flying into the sun because he couldn't deal with that juxtaposing, you know, ideals. He couldn't deal with, like, the fact that he had betrayed his mission and his purpose, you know. And it was really sad, it was really poetic, very Shakespearean. But yeah, Chloe Zhao did a fantastic job on this film. I'm a big fan of this film now. I'm looking forward to seeing actually her other work. I've heard good things about her. Obviously she won the Academy Award, the latest Academy Awards, she won Best Director. But this film was fantastic. I really enjoyed it. I loved it. I wasn't expecting to like it. It's in my top 10 Marvel films of all time. Or my top 10 MCU movies, should I say. It's in my top 10. Definitely, for sure. I'm not sure yet. I'd probably rank it around number 10. But it's definitely my top 10. I really enjoyed it. I wasn't expecting it to be anywhere near the top 10. But yeah, fantastic. I loved it. I might see it again in the cinema. I thoroughly enjoyed it and I definitely recommend it. Anyway, what did you think of Eternals? What did I miss? I'm trying this. There's so much to absorb with this film. Again, I needed to watch it a second time before doing this review. And I still have so many things that I probably didn't even talk about here that I need to, like, absorb. But let me know on Twitter what you thought of Eternals. I'd love to know your thoughts. And I'll see you next time for... And what do you think about where the Marvel Universe is going? The Marvel Cinematic Universe is going now. Are you enjoying it? Do you think it's going to be more epic than the Infinity Saga? Do you think we're progressing, moving forward with the stories and the Marvel MCU universe is just going on to another level? Because I think it's going on to another level, and I think we're just getting started. People ain't ready for some of the things that are going to happen, I think. But I'd love to know your thoughts. Let me know on Twitter, and I'll see you next time for another podcast. Peace.